We all react to various events as they occur. But even in reacting, there should be a plan, a measured response, an effort to assess the damage and go on from there. Proactive leadership makes plans for the future, has an idea on implementing those plans, anticipates problems, and has thoughts on how to deal with those problems. In several of my ministerial experiences, I've had to deal with some demanding people. And it almost seemed that as I was dealing with them, they were determined to question every move I made. Therefore, I learned to anticipate their next question and worked at having the answer before the question was asked. This approach proved to my adversary that I knew what I was doing. It also brought some of my adversaries into my camp, and they became my advocates. A good leader is fair and considerate in soliciting suggestions for solutions for problems. You may be right. Your solution may be the best one. However, it is a good idea to let others have an opportunity to express their ideas. If their questions are not viable, or their suggestions are not viable, this will eventually prove to be evident. If their suggestion is better than yours, then surely you want it to be implemented. A good leader is fair. Leaders should have power. People with power do not need to be unfair. When matters are moving favorably in your direction, let them freely move. When you win a battle or an issue is decided in your favor, do not mistreat the opponent, but rather be gracious to the one who was defeated. Finally, a good leader provides a good example. It's more difficult than you think. Simply because a person is a leader, he can become filled with pride. Pride can cause others to resent him. The leader who is a good example realizes that he has nothing to prove to anyone and he can simply enjoy being himself. I have known of commanders of military units whose position of authority and pride caused some problems within the command, while leaders who had significant authority allowed their sincere sense of humility and respect for others provide the leadership style that got the best results from the troops. A next suggestion is to deal with issues. Yes, there are occasions when the avoidance style of managing conflict is the correct approach for the moment. Some issues will evaporate because those who advocate them are not credible for one reason or another. Some issues will disappear with the passage of time. Some issues are so overwhelming that no one can solve them. Leave these and other issues like them alone if at all possible. Avoid them. However, there are issues that grow in strength if they are ignored. As a matter of fact, some issues that are ignored are like cancer in that as time passes, they become quite deadly. Most issues should be dealt with, and the sooner they are dealt with, there is a better chance of resolving them before they get out of control. Sometimes it is hard to determine the issue. It is either intentionally or unintentionally concealed. It is better in the eyes of some antagonists that the real issue be concealed. Therefore, its resolution is delayed. And as long as resolution is delayed, they are in control. In most cases, however, the issues are fairly evident and they simply require integrity and courage on the part of those who face them. I am reminded of the Jones family, we'll call them, who moved into a neighborhood and built a new home. Family loved their new neighborhood and everything about it except for one neighbor's dog. The dogs became, or she had more than one dog. These dogs became quite bothersome for the reasons that dogs can become bothersome. But the Jones family was never comfortable in confronting the neighbor about their dogs. That was 15 years ago. The dogs still run the neighborhood because the Jones family was never firm enough to face the issue of dogs overrunning the neighborhood and demand that something be done by the owners to correct the problem. Another suggestion in this matter of preventive maintenance: do not antagonize. Now, you think this suggestion is about as necessary as telling someone not to play with a rattlesnake. But you would be surprised to know how many pastors have faced forced termination because they needlessly either advocated or opposed an issue that they knew was highly controversial in nature. A case in point is the church-operated daycare center. When the pastor was called to serve the church, the daycare center was already in operation. He was told that it was a favorite project of the church, and he would virtually have no responsibilities for it. He was advised to simply leave it alone. The pastor, however, eventually became convinced that the daycare center was not an attractive feature of the church. He began to inquire about whether or not the people really wanted to support it. When those responsible for the center heard of his inquiry, they reminded him, "Preacher, we told you when we called you that this issue was not of your concern." They reminded him of the fact that they had earlier informed him of this, and they received a commitment from him that he would have nothing to do with it. The pastor continued his efforts to have the church reevaluate its commitment to the center. Today, the daycare center is still in operation, and the pastor is gone. If you stir up a hornet's nest, there is a good chance you will get stung. Let me make this statement once again about antagonizing people. Why do it? Why? As they say, stick your nose into situations where it should not be. Leave some situations alone where you have no business whatsoever. Another suggestion, wisely choose issues. When they go to war, generals must cautiously choose how to use their military resources, or the result could be the loss of the war as well as the battle. They also know that they only have so much that they can commit to a particular battle. They know that each battle will take its toll in terms of time and resources and energy. Then, when a general goes to battle, he wisely chooses when and where, as far as an engagement of the enemy is of concern. You get the picture. Some things are not worth fighting about. Let them go. Someone else may be able to fight that battle for you. You may win the battle without fighting it. What would you have if you did win that particular issue? And what would you lose if you lost? What would you lose if you lost? How much would you lose if you lost? A young pastor who had recently graduated from seminary had some special concerns about observing the communion service. It happened that some of his members disagreed with him about his concerns, and in talking with him, I helped him to see that his concern was more mechanical than theological in nature, and that he might just want to let this one go. He might want to just let this issue pass on by without a fight. He agreed, and he found that he could win a fight by losing it. Another suggestion is that you do not fight a battle for someone else, especially if you're not sure that the one for whom you are fighting is right. Again, I realize that some of these suggestions seem to be so simple in their nature or in their content, but in so many instances, so many situations, I've seen people be involved in these matters where I'm making these suggestions, and I just want to make them to you. A pastor had enjoyed several years of satisfying ministry in a substantially large city church. Just about the time he was concluding his ministry in that church and preparing to move to serve in another area, a conflict involving one of his staff erupted. The party involved in the conflict was the same person who had been the center of conflict on other occasions in this particular church. In just a short while, the situation grew to such proportion that it threatened the peaceful closure of the pastor's ministry at that church. Things had gone well for him the years that he'd been there. Things had gone very well. And now all of a sudden, at the time he's leaving, it appears there's going to be a problem, and it threatens the peaceful closure of his ministry at that church. Knowing that the staff member was the innocent party, he still forced the staff member to resign, rather than alienate the family of the church member who was largely responsible for initiating the conflict. The pastor took the expedient way out of this conflict and will have to live with that the rest of his life. Another suggestion, develop conflict tolerance. On too many occasions when conflicts begin, the involved parties frequently move into a win-lose approach, a win-lose attitude to managing the present conflict. This attitude is not only one of the greatest obstacles to settling a conflict in a non-destructive manner, but it is also responsible for violence in many conflict situations. A free society which so strongly advocates freedom of speech and acting out one's desires contributes to the immediate expression of the win-lose style of managing conflict. Although the immediate expression of the win-lose style of managing conflict is proper on some occasions, that's just it. It is proper only on certain occasions, not on all occasions. The need to develop a tolerance for conflict without being personally offended is great. While the need to be sensitive has already been discussed, it is suggested that at this time, there's a need not to be too sensitive when conflict occurs. Do not take matters so personally is a word of caution that I'd like to give you at this time. Another suggestion. Again, a very common sense thing that you can keep in mind when you think about doing those things in a preventive maintenance approach to managing conflict. Do your job. Do your job. Here's a bit of advice you think is just too simple for anyone to suggest, but it could save your ministry. As you are well aware, serving as a minister allows for freedoms and calls for disciplines that are not common to a lot of other professions. That is, other than Sundays, the minister's schedule is largely one he imposes on himself. Because of this, he must be careful to structure his week to perform his ministry in a timely and meaningful way. It's incredible how so many conflicts occur simply because some employees work so hard to avoid work they've been hired to do. And when they're asked to do it, they complain that the system demands too much. Their job is too burdensome. There's too much work to be done. They don't want to do their job, and thus they create a conflict situation. This attitude has even carried over to the church. A most helpful tool to the minister is a job description. The job description should include specific duties and work hours and assignments that are expected to be completed by the congregation. Ministering by a job description and regular work hours lessens the possibility of criticism and controversy, and thus can help prevent conflict from occurring in one of the most vulnerable areas of ministry, the pastor's workday, the pastor's schedule. Another suggestion or another thought to keep in mind as you work on this matter of preventive maintenance where destructive conflict is concerned. Keep in mind that maturity levels vary. Someone has said you can only go so far on a gallon of gas. You can't get blood out of a turnip. You can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. We know we've heard these expressions. Say it any way you want. People who comprise your congregation have limitations on their emotional, mental, and spiritual maturity. In your ministry, you must deal with these people, but realize for your own peace of mind that what you think is best and what they think is best may never be the same. Their maturity level is not the same as yours. It may be that yours is not as high as theirs. Or it may be that theirs is not as high or as mature as yours. With this thought in mind, you should realize from the very beginning that the best solution to a problem that you're going to get is one that is considerably less satisfying than you might desire, but it's the only solution that you will know, that you will have. I do not believe that the antagonist is just trying to aggravate the situation. Rather, he is maintaining his direction simply because that is the capacity that he has. That's all he has to offer to the situation. It may be his developed lifestyle, his education, his theological training, or a combination of these and other elements. But he is expressing his true feelings as best he knows at this particular point in his life. Yes, you should try to lead this person to consider other alternatives, but at the same time, you should be open to thoughts that he might express. Always keep in mind that the two of you may never agree on a solution, and the best relationship you can have will be one of tolerance. While serving as a minister to youth, I encountered a young person of another denomination who became a member of our youth group. He was definitely a member of the Christian faith, of course. But there were some points in his theology that were simply out of line with mine. On different occasions, we discussed our beliefs, but neither of us could accept the other's or the belief of the other person. It came to the point where we agreed to disagree, but we remained friends for many years that followed. You should know that these kinds of things will happen in your ministry. You should anticipate them and be determined that you will not let them drag you into destructive conflict. Let me state this suggestion once again. Maturity levels vary. People just think differently, act differently, behave differently than you do. I said not below or above necessary, but differently. And you need to keep this in mind as you deal with people and anticipate conflict situations. Here's another suggestion. No parliamentary procedure. Have a good grasp, a good working knowledge of parliamentary procedure. Not too long ago, I attended an annual meeting where the person presiding had no idea what he was doing as he tried to conduct the business of that meeting. No matter what the issue, he was totally dependent on the parliamentarian for instructions on how to process each item that came up for discussion, each item that was presented during the business session. On a couple of occasions, the chairman, although not intending to do so, offended delegates by calling them out of order when he did not know how to properly proceed with the question that was being asked. He didn't know what was taking place, and so he simply called the delegate out of order. I was embarrassed for the chairman. I could not believe that someone would accept such an important position without either having or at least learning the basic skills necessary for conducting a business meeting. If you want to keep confusion to a minimum and prevent conflict from occurring during those occasions when the church is conducting its business, no parliamentary procedure. This will give you confidence in what you're doing and assist in conducting the business of the church in an orderly manner. And things that are done in an orderly manner certainly preclude confusion and conflict from occurring. Now, here's another suggestion. Do not fear conflict. Do not fear conflict. Most pastors do not want any type of conflict in their church. And if conflict is present, they do not want anyone in the congregation to acknowledge it. This tells a lot about their knowledge or lack of knowledge about the concepts of conflict management. First, I've said, there is value in conflict. When people disagree with each other, it says that they care. They care about the issue in question. They care about what's being discussed. If they disagree, it's a sign that they care. Please keep that in mind. It's not a sign of insubordination when a person questions a superior? Imagine a world where people do not express their ideas, their objections, their opinions. It is an indication there is no concern for the outcome of an issue if that's their approach, their attitude. Deliver me from a society where nobody gets upset over the quality of how things are done or how things are not done. There is value in conflict. To realizing there's value in conflict, you should secondly understand that constructive conflict helps find a better way. Many of the laws that provide for our safety, health, and well-being have come about because of an awareness of a danger and a willingness to lead in making a change. A conflict brought about a change for the better. Thirdly, conflict can be used to move your organization out of a state of apathy. Survey the needs of your church and community. Design plans to meet those needs. Propose changes to meet those needs. The congregation will come alive as this process makes way, and you will soon know the pulse of your congregation. Do not fear conflict. See it as an indication that people do care about the organization in which it is occurring. Use conflict as a means of helping your church perform its mission and ministry. And then here is another suggestion as we think about preventive maintenance skills. Use good judgment. If it looks like something is going to cause a problem, then in most cases it will. If it looks like it will work, then try it. If you feel the anticipated response is going to do much more harm than good, then you will want to proceed with extreme caution, or maybe not even do it. All these statements sound simple, don't they? Yet you and I both remember situations when we decided to move in a particular direction when our alarm systems were telling us things just don't look right. Do not let people talk you into something or out of doing something with which you feel uncomfortable. Don't let them talk you into something. Don't let them talk you out of something when you know better, when you know what's right, and when you know what's wrong. It could even be a close friend or a companion who is doing the talking. But deep down inside, you know better. Use good judgment. Don't let flattery lead you into conflict situations which may cause lasting harm and damage in your life. On one occasion, I accepted a youth minister's position because of all the flattery that came with the invitation. The church was growing. It was an exciting place to be. The salary and the program and the budget were more than adequate. But I had earlier made up my mind that my previous youth position was to be my last one due to my age. I was just getting too old, I felt. Nevertheless, I accepted the offer and did a good job until finally I admitted that I accepted the position because of ego, not a commitment to the work. I resigned. But I learned from that experience. And since that time, I have been very cautious about making moves in my ministerial career. I may have lost salary opportunities along the line, didn't make as much money maybe as I could have, but I have known job satisfaction in the ministry where I was serving. Now, in the remaining moments that we have, let me pose some hypothetical situations and ask you what you think the persons involved should do with the situations. All right? Now, here's one. Let's call this the ghost pastor. People cannot find the pastor at home or the office. He's becoming known for not being available when people need him. His sermons sound the same each time he preaches. He has missed seeing church members who spent time in the hospital. He didn't visit them when he should have. If you were going to give this pastor some advice on preventive maintenance skills, what would you suggest that he quickly begin to do? In light of the things that I've just been saying, I listed several things. Which of these would you say that he needs to keep in mind? How about do your job? Here's another one. A pastor has been asked several times to speak with the minister of music about his appearance during worship services. He's a fine musician, but his personal hygiene is not acceptable. The music minister also is poorly prepared for rehearsals. He either does not have the music that is needed, or he does not have enough of what's being used. He's just poorly prepared over and over again. He's not ready for the job that needs to be done. The pastor, in the meantime, is not saying anything because he does not see these criticisms as being significant. What advice would you give him in light of the things that I've been saying during this class? Deal with minor issues before they become major issues. Here's another one. A minister has encountered several forms of resistance to his ministry during the past 18 months. It seems that everything he attempts meets with conflict. He has an opportunity to make a lateral move. He's not really excited about it. He doesn't necessarily want to go. He has not really spent a lot of time studying the potential place of service where he may be going, but he is going to accept it because it provides an immediate opportunity for him to leave. What should he do? I would suggest that he look before he takes this leap. Here's another one. A pastor was offended by some remarks he overheard about his wife's manner of dressing. The remarks were neither crude nor vulgar. They were just some things that had been expressed by members of the church at one point or another during the course of the week. They were neither crude nor vulgar. His wife does not even know that the remarks were made. It does not matter. He's going to let these people know that they should not say such things. He's going to let them know that they shouldn't talk this way. Do you agree with what he is about to do? Let me suggest that, once again, he carefully choose issues about which he will fight. Carefully choose issues about which you will fight. All right? Here's another. The pastor wants everybody to be happy all the time. He wants the staff to always be in harmony. If he hears that someone has a concern or a criticism, he calls and he visits them, and he just doesn't want anybody at any time to be unhappy about anything. He does not like conflict. He sees no value in conflict. He doesn't want any kind of conflict to be in the shadow of his ministry or around his ministry. What advice might you give this man? I might suggest that he learn that there is indeed value in constructive conflict. In summary, let me say, while destructive conflicts will occur in the life of the church, there are things that can be done to prevent a lot of them from happening. Some of these strategies include improving communication and leadership skills, learning to identify and implement various conflict management styles, dealing with minor issues before they become major ones, and exercising good common sense. Implementing these and other preventive maintenance tools will help you to control conflict in the local congregation. In conclusion, preventive maintenance is your best defense against the presence of destructive conflict in your church. If you wait until destructive conflict has taken root before you attempt to resolve it, you will find you have a major task at hand. This concludes 7.